Men's Lifeline Academy, where we help stellar men reclaim their lives, get their dead heart beating, and invite stellar men of action, men who went from inaction life to action, so that way they can inspire their family, their friends, and their communities. Today, I'm honored to have Dad Leader, better known on X, known as Dan in real life. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Zach. I appreciate you.
Oh, of course. I just, you know, we've been following each other for some time, and you want to be kind of reached out together to figure out how we can get a podcast going. So that way you can kind of tell your story of how you went from a dad of inaction, not knowing your place in life. And before we get into that, Dan is also in the Marines. So let's give him a solid thank you for his service.
Hey, I appreciate your support, man.
Always. Hey, you gotta, I've had a few veterans on and always have to show support for those who go overseas and gives us the freedoms that we have today. So just thank you. So Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, man. Hey, thanks, Zach, for that introduction. I appreciate you again having me on here. You basically covered it. I'm Dad to Leader on X, better known as Dan to most people. I'm a dad. I became a dad in 2018, just a few days before my very first deployment. Spent the next 4 years as a single dad, a non-custodial dad, juggled the visits, you know, for 4 years. I fought some very expensive legal battles. I remarried, or actually married for the first time in 2023, and just had my second son. He's just over a month old. So now I'm a blended family dad. I'm a husband, like I said, and my wife and I were building our dynasty together. I was a Marine, like you covered, from 2015 to 2020. Got a couple deployments, made a lot of lifelong friends, learned a lot of good leadership lessons. And I'm kind of an amateur athlete. I'm a runner, I'm a swimmer, I'm a hiker. I'm running my first half marathon in December.
Pretty excited about that. Congratulations. You're going to have to let us know how that went, being that triathlon.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. That's a brief overview of who I am at the moment.
Well, there's just a lot to unpack there. You went from, you know, you're a non-custodial dad, had to fight a lot of legal battles, and now you, hey, congratulations on getting married about a year ago.
Thank you. It was a game changer. I highly recommend it.
You highly recommend it. Okay, so why do you highly recommend marriage?
Look, man, there's something about being with someone and having that commitment for life that really unlocks a level of potential that I don't think you recognize that you have until you're in that position. You work together on something, you have those shared goals, that shared vision. It's powerful.
That's awesome. So kind of tell us your story a little bit more of, like, you know, what was your wake up call of that turning point from not really taking that action life, you know, and kind of what led up to kind of maybe unfortunately the breakup between your ex that, you know, is your baby mama.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I would say, you know, for a very big period of my life, I was very passive. I was a very passive person. Things just kind of happened to me. I went with the flow. I was homeschooled my whole life. I grew up in an extremely religious, very small cult-like community, and left home and joined the Marine Corps. It was a culture shock. Well, just kind of jumped in with both feet and had to learn on the go. And then when I had my son, you know, it was with a woman I wasn't in a serious relationship with. That was the wake up call. That was when it was like, okay, all of a sudden now my actions are impacting somebody, you know, besides just myself. I'm not just living for me anymore.
That's a good wake up call. And that's a very kind of common story. It's like whenever there's a child involved, it's like, oh no, now it's not just about me. It's about someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course there was a period there. Like for those first 6 months I was deployed, right? I wasn't with him. I wasn't with his mom. There was lots of days where I sat and asked myself, like, should I even be doing this? Like, you know, am I crazy? Should I give up my rights? Like, how do I even be a dad in this scenario? You know, I'm stationed thousands of miles away from where he lives. What does it even mean to be a dad in that situation? The next 2 years, I had another deployment, lots of training, like these little short visits, just like a FaceTime relationship, you know, reading some little kid books or whatever. And then when I finally finish active duty, I'm still living thousands of miles away. I'm going to college. I'm in a new relationship with my wife now. Constantly, I think that year that I got out, I made 9 trips back and forth to California, and I just realized that it was just, you know, extremely unsustainable. And of course all the emotions that come along with that. And that, I think, was, if I had to say, this was the point where I turned from a passive person in my own life to someone that, no, okay, I'm going to take full responsibility. I'm going to control the things that I can control and let go of the things that I can't. That would be the moment, I think, was, you know, after those trips, I had planned a big trip, and it was going to be the first trip where I was taking him out of California. He's, I think he would have been 3.5 or 4 years old at the time. And, you know, long story short, comes down to the very moment, and she doesn't allow it to happen for whatever reason. And then I went, you know, 400 days, actually it was 400 days from the last visit that I had seen him until, you know, a lot of legal battles later that I was able to have some custody again. But it was during that time that I had to make that decision, right? That I'm not going to allow my relationship with my son to be determined by somebody else, right? Like, I'm not going to use that as an excuse. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, there's challenges, but those challenges have to be overcome.
All right. Wow, I didn't know you almost went a whole year without seeing your kid with all the legal battles and everything. And I know from what we talked about off the podcast is that a lot of times you didn't have as much interactions with him because of your deployment.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was limited contact with him during those deployments. Like I said, he lived on one coast. I was stationed right on the other. So in between, you know, in between trainings, in between deployments, I would get to spend some weekends. I think probably never more than 10 days at a time, that I recall.
Wow. So how did your son respond to all that?
You know, the face, young,
still those early childhood memories are still solid.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, they're super important. You know, the FaceTime thing was huge. Technology really does allow for a different level of connection across space. And, you know, reading him books from before he could talk or before he could walk over FaceTime, you know, that did start to lay the groundwork for a relationship. Now, his first trip away from mom, I was actually just looking at these pictures the other day, and I was looking at his face, and it kind of broke my heart a little bit, because you can see he's uncomfortable, right? Wow. I mean, he's out of his element. This is the first time that he's been away or whatever. And I probably didn't handle everything perfectly. I would like to think that I did, but I'm not that naive. But where we've got in the last 2 years is fantastic, right? Like that's really what I've been excited about. You know, there, like I said, that there was that adjustment period. We tried to make it very special. We, you know, let him decorate his own room. You know, spent our time making all that stuff together. We planned out, you know, every trip that we had after a certain point, you know, we planned it out with him so that he was a part of the plan, planned it out in advance, right? I talked to him on FaceTime. Hey, like, these are the things we want to do. What do you want to do? You know, I can't give him 15 options. He's, you know, 4 to 6 years old, but give him 2 or 3 options. Which one of these sounds good to you? And just let him get involved in that. And it's been awesome to watch that blossom over the years, right? Like, he's gotten used to making those plans. Now he wants to know what's going on. He asked me to buy him a planner. And I was so excited when he asked me this, but it was like, I think about 6 months ago, he asked me to buy him a planner. I was like, okay, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry you had to ask, right? And now he's got everything in there, what we're gonna do on what day. He loves it.
I don't believe that. That's hilarious. That's awesome. Hilarious. Yeah. Surprising. Like, I'm kind of speechless right now because I've never known of it. Like, I low key like, I have a planner.
Well, you know what it was, Zach? Every night when he's at my house, every night we sit down and we plan out the next day.
Oh. That's what
my wife and I do together already. And then, of course, I just brought him right into that. And I, at the time, he had like a little notebook in his room and he was just writing stuff in that. But he asked me, Dad, I'd like to have an actual planner. Okay, absolutely. Start him young.
Oh, yeah, something really young. I mean, he's gonna be highly successful if he's already planning out his days and what takes most adults in their 20s and 30s to figure out.
Well, you know what, Zach? I really see as a dad, my number one responsibility is to teach him everything that I know about how to be successful, everything that I know about how to thrive in a world that, literally wants to chew you up and spit you out, especially boys. It's not a kind world.
Well, especially with as much as you've seen, I mean, you really know how unkind it can be compared to a non-civil, to compared to a civilian.
That's
I mean, I think
an
that's the
interesting
huge
point.
distinction. I mean, you've seen, I can't even fathom what you've seen. And I've actually talked to vets about some of the things that they've seen and went through. So I still can't fathom it.
You know, I've never thought about how that might have shaped my perception, but yeah, it's a solid point. It's not a nice world, and it's not getting nicer.
No. Well, that's why we gotta be strong, courageous, kind, compassionate, gotta be everything and everything, and reaching that potential of just being a human and recognizing all the emotions and thoughts you have as valid and trying to live the best life you can. Live a, as you know, I have to say, a worthy and honorable life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when you have kids, because they're watching. They're watching every single thing you do.
Yeah, actually, I was just talking to another person, and we're talking about how kids model you, will model after you and watch you, and that's how kids learn. And there's a really big disconnect when an adult can do something, however, a kid cannot. So if you get a parent that swears, like, well, I can eat ice cream whenever I want because I'm their parent, I'm the adult. Like, I can cuss, I can swear, you can't, but I can. And the kid's just going to be like, and as someone who's worked with kids, their minds are like, I don't get that. And it's not being like explained to them what that even means. Like, what is an adult thing compared to what's a kid thing? There's no lesson involved. It's just the finger, as I like to call it.
Yeah, the distinction isn't made clear. I have a little short story if I can about that.
Go for it.
So I'm a little bit of a nerd, right? I carry a backpack everywhere that I go. It's got my headphones and my sunglasses and like a notebook and like just whatever I need, maybe a water bottle. And I take it everywhere that I go. I don't carry it through Walmart, but it's probably in the car.
Right.
And anyway, this is like first summer visit that I have with my son. He's here for the entire summer. He's 4 at the time. And I'm packing my backpack. Every single day I'm putting stuff in, taking stuff out. And it's like, I don't know, 1 week into this visit, we're about to go somewhere. And he goes, "Dad, hang on." And he goes to his room. And he comes out with his little Sonic on the go backpack that's like this big. And he shoved, he did this completely on his own. He shoved a notebook that he found somewhere. He shoved a book that was way beyond what he could even read at the time. He's 4. He shoves that in there. He's got a water bottle in there and I think a hat or something like that. And he goes, "Dad, what do you have in your backpack?" And I told him, and he looked in his. He goes, "Okay, I think I'm good."
Oh,
But
that
they're
is
watching
awesome.
you. They're watching you all the time, even when you don't think. I never crossed my mind. I never crossed my mind to teach him to take a backpack places that he goes with things that he might need. Never crossed my mind, but he saw me do it.
That's right. And I think that shows how much we have to pay attention to our actions and what we do. Like, I think it's
100%.
awesome that you carry a backpack with some water. Okay, now you're teaching them hydration. So now we can go into those like little lessons. A book. So if you want to stop by and just read, now we're talking about education. Now you're talking about sunglasses. Gotta protect yourself. If you don't have sunglasses out, the sun can be really bright, especially if you're like in California, especially. If you're more in states that have snow, because the sun will actually reflect off the snow and it can actually become brighter. So there's always a reason for something. It's just being able to teach it, understand it. And honestly, how many people tell you to walk around with a notebook? I mean, I carry it around my backpack and I have a whole bunch of stuff. And a lot of times it is a notebook. I mean, most of it's for work. If I have an idea, I'll write stuff down when I have a minute. So, no, that's awesome. Teaching me
I
young,
think
as
that's
they
a
like to
Marine
say.
Corps thing. That's a Marine Corps thing. They drilled the notebook into me for sure.
Well, I mean, I talked to, like I said, talked to a few military vets, and that's the one thing that I would talk about all the core kind of lessons. I think there's what, seven of them? I don't remember quite exactly. They say there's like a mantra. There's a motto where it's like courage. I don't want to get this wrong, but there's something like that where think this one, this guy was in the Army, I want to say. They still in something like that. I know it's a little bit different than Marines because everyone has their own different brand, mantra, things like that that you live by. So it's just one of those things that, that they always live by. Mm-hmm. You know, those core values, those core beliefs of what's been instilled in you. So if you've always been taught to have a notebook, I mean, that's one way to get our thoughts on paper. That way, you know, to trust your memory, as Jim Rohn would say.
Absolutely. A big fan of Jim Rohn.
So one of your taglines that I really enjoy on your kind of your X header is non-custodial dad does not mean part-time dad.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really solid. Can you explain that just a little bit more? Like, what is like a non-custodial dad for those who may not know?
Okay, yeah. So for anyone that's not familiar, a non-custodial dad is just a dad that does not have primary custody, right? Primary physical custody. Maybe you have split legal custody, but you don't have primary custody. In my situation, I have less than 50%, right? So I'm considered the non-custodial parent. His mother would be considered the custodial parent. That's the distinction between those two.
Yeah, thank you. I know that when you get to like all those legal terms, I know a lot of people could get confused. Like, does that mean I don't have rights to medical? Does that mean I have no rights at all? Uh-huh. I mean, there's a lot that you have to, especially when you're working with front of the court, have to really dissect and really understand what is, like, what does this even mean? Especially if you're in that world.
It's extremely complicated and very overwhelming, actually.
Yeah. No, it is. I did a few things with front of the court, like supervised parenting time. So I've worked with them for a little bit.
Very cool.
Internship. So it's a lot of work, especially when you're trying to reconnect the families. And I know you're trying to be more of an active dad. So what lessons have you taken from, you know, being with your ex to now your wife? So now that you're like, what lessons are you doing differently now?
What I've learned is that in a relationship, just like anything else, really, but it comes down to who you are much more often than it comes down to who the other person is. My mom used to have this saying when I was a kid. She would say, you know, don't focus on what's wrong with other people. Look at yourself and see what you can change. And, you know, it was just a thing she said, dude. I didn't take it serious. It was just mom say stuff, you know, and I never even sat down to really think about it. And I don't think I was probably younger than 28 years old when I started to understand what that really meant. You can't control other people.
Right.
You can't control how they show up, but you can control how you show up. And leadership isn't about position. It's not about authority. It's about positive influence, right? And how you show up in a relationship directly, it is directly reflected by the health of that relationship. Absolutely. That I think was the biggest change. It was me, right? It was how I showed up. That was the biggest change.
Yeah. Moms don't get enough credit.
No,
they don't. All the wisdom that they share. And when they say, you know, don't focus on other people, just focus on what you can make, you know, an impact in your life. And it's like, as a kid, you know what it means, but you don't have that experience of like until you get older, and it's just like, oh man, now I see it. Yeah, you're right. I can't change 100%. Other people. No matter how 100%. Hard you try, no matter how hard you want to do good for them, in some cases, not always for ill. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, think, well, you're trying to conform me to something I'm not. Where a lot of us can be like, well, I just want to make you better, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And changing them would be much, much easier usually than changing yourself. Right. Looking inward and saying, OK, what am I doing? What could I be doing? Right. How can I affect this situation from the inside? That's well, really that's my approach.
Exactly. That's why it becomes a leader, where you focus on leading by example. Then typically people begin to follow suit. Like, you see a lot of people on X a lot of times post their workouts, post how much they want for a walk. And then all of a sudden you get this like stream of support of, wow, I'm going to get a Fitbit now. I'm going to start counting how many steps I'm doing in a day. Oh man, I only got 500 steps in a day. Okay, what happened? Oh, I was sitting in an office all day. There's no way I could have gotten 23,000 steps, let's say. Yeah. Okay, well, what can I do? And, you know, it kind of goes back to that, probably one of the best lines ever in Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki was, don't say you can't afford it, ask how can I? Because when you do, absolutely, your brain begins to change, your thoughts begin to change, and then you focus on really what you have control over.
100%. I couldn't have said it better. Absolutely. One of my pet peeves is the word can't. I don't like it, right? I told my son, I said, you can swear if you like, but don't use the can't word, right? Like that's the word we don't, obviously I'm being a bit facetious.
Right.
But I don't like it, right? And every time I hear it, I push back. Okay, well, why can't you? And I was actually having a conversation with a friend just the other day, and he said, I want to do this thing, but I can't. And I said, oh, well, why can't you? And he gave me a made up answer to a terrible question that he had never actually spent the time to find the actual answer to. I think I spent 30 seconds Googling, you know, finding the answer to the question and to show, look, man, actually, you're wrong. You could, you know, you absolutely could. He said, oh, well, I never really looked into it yet because you don't want to. And that's the key distinction, right? It's not about not acknowledging that you have limitations. We're human beings, right? I have limitations, so many limitations, right? But it's about not putting it on those limitations and recognizing your responsibility for making that decision, whether to do or not to do. You don't get to avoid responsibility for that decision by saying, I can't. No, you could. You might not like the outcome. It might not go well. You're choosing not to, and that's perfectly okay. It's okay to not do things, right? But you could do them. You're choosing not to. And if you don't acknowledge that in your speech, right, then you won't acknowledge that in your actions either.
Yeah, I think of two great things when you said that. One, with the word can. I, you know, talk about moms. Whenever I would use the word can, or she would ever hear someone say can, she would always tell me, you know what can't means? And I said, what? It means won't. You're unwilling to do it.
Absolutely.
It means you're not willing to think how to solve it. You're not willing to do anything about it. I'm like, okay. You know, I mean, it did take some time, and always have to remind myself that when that word's about to come out, because those words love to come out.
Absolutely. They're easy to use.
It is. And that's why he kind of goes to the second point of Brian Tracy. I've been watching a lot of his videos recently where he talks about how much we don't really take time to think. And I've actually practiced this like a couple of times this week where I'll just take time, take 10, 20 minutes, and just literally think about whether it's a problem or a solution or something that's going on, and something that I have to be more mindful of. And really, in 10 minutes, you're coming up with different ideas, different solutions. And then you have like Teddy Roosevelt who says, you know, if you're coming with a problem with no solutions, you're not complaining, you're whining. So one thing I started doing is actually writing down a lot of the quotes. So that way it can always kind of live within me in a way. So that way, okay, if I'm not coming to any solution at this, okay, I'm not even complaining, I'm whining. At least if I have a few solutions and not working, then at least it gives you a little bit more reason to complain. It's like, okay,
absolutely,
I'm literally trying to figure this out. And just for some odd reason, as we all know, life, you got to try 1,000 solutions to get an answer, 1,000 questions. So.
Absolutely. You know, talking about taking that time to stop and think, I think we don't understand how preoccupied, how unnaturally preoccupied our minds are, right?
Right.
I mean, 10 minutes to stop and think sounds like an eternity to most people. But 500 years ago, not even, right, 150 years ago, people would spend hours alone in silence thinking a day by necessity because they were walking to and from work or maybe driving to and from here or there, right? But you didn't have this in front of you all day. You didn't have headphones in, listening to music. You didn't have the TV on in the background. You didn't have mom on FaceTime. And there's nothing wrong with these things. You know, they're pieces of technology that are great. But, you know, by neglecting to give ourselves those 10 minutes, we really build up a lot of stress, like you're talking about, that could really be gotten rid of if we just sit down, be present in the moment. My personal favorite, I love to write, right? I've loved to write since I was a kid. And I do it every single day. And that's my, you know, cathartic, slow down, quiet, work out my problems time. I use pen and paper. You know, I type all day, I'm on the computer a lot, but when I sit down to write, I like to use a pen and paper. It slows me down. It forces me to think about my words. It forces me to be more articulate. And I'm a terrible speller, so it helps me out with that.
There you go.
But yeah, taking that time to sit down, to be quiet, to try to solve the problem, to try to articulate the problem, even, I think it's super powerful.
Yeah, in regards to, I mean, that's one way to learn how to, you know, write again. That way you can write neater, write more clearer, and learn how to become a better speller by practice. And that's something we always know. You know, it's going to be uncomfortable for the first time. It's just like when you go running for the first time, your legs are going to be itchy. Your legs are going to be uncomfortable. However, the more time you run, the more your body gets used to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, absolutely. You got a lot of gold today, man. I appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate you having me on. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
So how do you help a dad kind of, you know, wake up, whether they start beginning to write, think more? You know, I know you're on a mission to really help inspire other dads that were once in your, you know, were once in your position. Now you want to take them to the next level, becoming more that active dad. And as we know, there's been a lot of research on absent fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they don't want to have any role in their kid's life, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is very, very small. Or they're being kept away from their, you know, child and things like that. There's different ways that has happened. So how do you kind of help a dad in that kind of situation where you want them to really begin to take responsibility and like, listen, this is another life that we need to be responsible for, because your action today is going to affect them lifelong. And I've seen personally with people who don't have an active father in their life, and they still many, many, many years later desire that. Mm-hmm. Like they miss that. But a lot of them, because whether their dad's passed or their dad's moved away, they just don't have that connection anymore.
Of course. Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, every single dad experiences this differently, right? All I know is my experience, and everything that I tell other dads, the ways that I try to help them, it's derived from that, right? I can't pull from anything else. I can only pull from my own experience. So
right.
I go through kind of the six steps that I went through when I was, you know, going from this place that I'm in the passenger seat to hold on, right? Let me drive. So, you know, the first thing, like you're talking about, is taking the responsibility. But to do that, you have to understand what you're taking responsibility for. For me, I sat down and I defined my values. What do I value? Mm-hmm. If I don't know what I value, then I don't have a place from which to make decisions. There's no continuity in my life at all. Right. I remember kind of the moment that I realized that I didn't have defined values. And I was in college and I was working towards this degree that I wasn't sure if I wanted. And I was looking at houses in three different states. I didn't know where I wanted to go. And I sat down and I told my fiance at the time, I said, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. Right. And that's not the only time I've felt that. I'm sure most people feel that pretty frequently. I feel it all the time. But I started to realize I didn't have, that there was no continuity. Right. And I was like, why don't I have this continuity? Where do most people, you know, get this continuity? Values. That was where it was at. So I sat down and I defined my values. Now you know what you need to take responsibility for, right? For me, family, really big part of my values. Take responsibility for that, right? Now there's some type of continuity. The next step for me was to lay out some type of vision. Like, what did I want, right? Define it. What did being a dad in my situation, what did that mean, right? It didn't mean going to every single baseball game and picking him up on, you know, from school and dropping him off. It didn't mean that thing. It couldn't mean that for me, right? My situation was different. So what did it mean for me and what did I want? And then from there saying, okay, here's what I want. This is who I need to be. Now I can set the goals, right? Here's some goals. And I started to set out the things that I needed to accomplish to realize that vision. And then the fourth thing that I did was I really started reflecting regularly on what was working and what wasn't working, right? What approach in my conversations with my son was working? What approach in my conversations with my wife was or was not working? How can I make it better? Even in finances, right? Like what's working, what isn't working, how can I make it better? That reflection was key, and it really unlocked the next level of growth for me. From there, I started to derive the habits that I needed, right? How can I maximize my time with my son? What kind of person did I need to show up as, right? Mm. And then what do I need to do every day to become that person? So one of those things for me was I need to have the energy to keep up with them. I've never been an incredibly unfit person, but I've definitely been less fit and lower energy than I am now. And, you know, after one visit, being exhausted, I was carrying him on my back. He'd fallen asleep. It was like a 2-mile walk. We were walking around the city. I was exhausted. And I said, I've got to get back in better shape, right? Simple little things, but doing them every single day so that you can make sure that you're showing up as that person. And then the last step for me was, okay, now all of these things, right? Here are my values. This is my vision. These are my goals. You know, I'm reflecting, I'm improving, I'm iterating. These are the habits. And then to take that and to iterate it out into the future, right? Make that future plan. Where am I going? Right. Mm-hmm. First, I think I was 2 or 3 years, and then it was 10 years, and then it was 40 years, right? Like thinking ahead, what's it going to be? Where am I going? What am I doing? I think of it like I have this little analogy that I use for plans, because people love to hate on plans. Like, oh, well, you're making a plan for 40 years. You don't know where you're going to be in 40 years.
Right.
I tell them you're absolutely right. Right. But a plan is like a GPS. You get in your car. Most of us can't even drive to Walmart without a GPS. Let's be honest, right? We're so dependent on it. So we get in, right, and we punch it in, and it gives us a couple of things, right? It gives us a route. It gives us an ETA. It gives us these two valuable things, right? We plan our days around the ETAs, and we follow the route almost mindlessly. Now there's a wreck. What happens? Did you throw the GPS out the window? No, it just changes the route. You can still follow it. And a plan is that way. It's not something for you to follow to the T. It's something for you to adjust. It gives you an estimated time of arrival. It tells you roughly how long it's going to take to get here. It's incredibly important. But yeah, that was a super long answer to your incredibly simple question. I'm so sorry.
No, that was not by any stretch of the imagination a simple answer. Or a question, I should say. No, I don't think there's really too many questions that are very simple. We just get wiser in how we can answer them. Yeah, you know, well, was it Albert Einstein that says, if you can't explain something to like a third or fourth grader about a subject, then you really don't know what it's about.
You don't understand it. Mm-hmm.
And even within those, I mean, that's still complex, right? You know, values. Where do you get your values from? How do you develop values? How do you define your values that are a reflection of you, not someone else that you're trying to copy or mimic? Because I think there's a lot of that where someone mm-hmm. will, you know, write like a script or a life quote that they live by. However, at the same time, they will really just focus on someone else's writing versus mm-hmm. their own writing. Now, there could be
I can tell you.
Go ahead.
Would you like me to answer that question? Or was
I
that just like,
love, hey, man, it's all about you. I would love to hear your answer.
So look, I don't know how to do it. I only know how I did it. All right. And this is not an exercise that was original to me. I stole it from a book. I don't remember. I think The Buddha and the Badass, which I'm not even sure is a good book, but I liked this exercise. And it was to sit down and take the 10 peak moments, five like low, well, I guess peaks and valleys, the five highest moments and the five lowest moments mm-hmm. in your life. I think I sat down and just wrote about all of mine. Maybe I had 10 or 12 for each. And, you know, I wrote out what they were. And then I wrote out the story, how I remembered it. Right. I mean, you know, from the best memories of my life to the absolute worst ones. Right. And it was, I was actually on the road filming a documentary with my best friend at the time. And I remember sitting at a cafe writing and just crying. Right. I mean, I'm 30 years old in a cafe crying because it's emotional. You're recalling these like, you know, worst moments of your life and best moments. I write them all down and then step away. And then I came back again, right? You know, days later, I let days go by and I looked through and I reread each story. And then I asked myself, why was that important to me? Why is this such a highlight for me? Why was this so painful? What made this specific situation so painful? It wouldn't have been maybe as painful for you, right? It might have been, it'd be less painful for somebody else. Why was it painful to me? And I saw a theme emerge so quickly. And I said, those are my values. They've been my values since I was a child. They're the values that I have, the values maybe that I was raised with, right? I'm sure you can make that argument. Wherever I got them from, it didn't matter. They were the ones I already had. I didn't have to create them for myself. They were already there. I just had to find them and understand them. And once I did, I connected to those so easily because it wasn't fake. It was authentic. It was coming from me as opposed to trying to impose them on myself. That's how I did it.
I think that speaks volumes because that's how we learned. I know a lot of people are trapped in the past of all the mistakes that they've done versus focusing on the lessons that they learned from the past. So I think that's incredible, especially the emotional connection of literally shedding tears over reliving some of these stories that you had experienced and then finding out when you were kind of calm, regulated, and to what can I learn from this? Now, that's a very similar exercise that Patrick Beck David talks about is, you know, when you want to improve your life, when you want to improve it, you got to focus on like, where are the times where everything went astray? You were just completely lost, broken, everything. Where are the times you won in life? And because he made a connection to like actors. And the reason why actors can be so powerful is because when they're preparing for a scene, they go back to that time. So if they're like, if they have to produce like a scene where they're crying, they might go back to that time where they really felt that true emotion.
Absolutely.
And so it just shows you how much stories are part of our, part of the human experience and human lives. I mean, stories, whether they be analogies, whether they be metaphors, similes, whether they be just like a life lesson, a legend, a myth, they all serve a purpose of teaching a lesson.
Absolutely. Stories are so important. I mean, they are the human experience.
And that's the one way we connect with each other. Like we're going to have different stories and different life experiences.
Of course.
And at the same time, we can find that connection of that human emotion, that experience, and that driving force, whether we took action or at times inaction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think as human beings, we don't connect to each other, right? We connect to the story. If I see you on the street, I don't connect to you.
Right.
You tell me about, you know, the time your dog died, I connect to that story, connect to those experiences, but we don't connect to each other outside of that.
Yeah. And are we connecting the right way? You know, are we one upping each other or are we connecting with each other?
Absolutely.
And so in one way is I kind of talk about like, in a way like that toxic masculinity is when you're always trying to one up, right? You're always trying to tell a better story.
Yeah.
Where you're like devaluing the other guy's story. And it's like, oh yeah, well, how about this? And you have no idea if that's even true or not at the end of the day, unless you see some evidence and some evaluated experiences and things like that, then maybe. So, you know, versus promoting a healthy form of masculinity and fatherhood of really helping each other, supporting each other and being that role model. Because a lot of people are just hungry for a role model and someone just to, hell, just to believe in them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So many people don't have that. And, you know, to take it back to the role of dads, right? That's what it is. To have that, to have a dad that believes in you 100% of the time. The love, super important. Absolutely important. But that belief, I don't think anything is more important. It's so important for the development of a child, especially for boys. I don't have girls yet. I have two boys, terrified to raise girls. Cross that bridge when we get to it. But for boys, it's so important to have that. He's in your corner. Your dad's in your corner. You know, I think that a lot of times our culture has taken this, oh, you know, dads are like a bonus, like, right, like add a dad for, you know, however much. It's not an add-on. It's not an upgrade, right? It's baseline. It's required. It's necessary for proper development. It's not just, oh, yeah, cool to have a dad. It's not how it works. your role isn't optional.
Right. And doing whatever you can to be the active father.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have like a coaching program that you run? Do you have like a study group? Like, how do you go out and help these men?
I do have a coaching program. I just launched it. It's still kind of in the beta phases right now. Still working out my, you know, my webpage and whatnot. But yes, I do have a coaching program based on those six steps that we talked about, you know, defining my values, taking responsibility, mm-hmm. the vision, setting my goals, my reflection, creating my habits, and then planning for the future. Those are kind of the pillars of my program.
Oh, that's awesome. I love the personal connection to it too. And that's what's really cool about everyone I bring on. They do things just a little bit differently. They do mm-hmm. it to themselves, and they do something from their own personal experience, what they found worked for them. And if it works for you, mm-hmm. hey, it might work for you as well. Give it a shot. What do you have to lose?
Absolutely. 100%.
So as we wrap up today, Dad, what's a word of encouragement, a statement, a phrase that you would like to give someone today?
Look, if you're waiting for something, you know, for things to get better, for things to be less busy, to be in a better financial state, those are all excuses, right? You got to start, and you got to start right now. You got to be the strong leader who lets nothing, literally nothing, stop him from doing what's right. Not time, not money, not situations. A strong leader makes the right choices, bar none. Money is not an excuse to not make the right choice. Time is not an excuse. You got to do it.
All right. Limit those excuses and take more action. Sounds like a man of action to me. Dan, I just want to thank you so much for coming to the podcast. I know it's bright and early where you're at. So I just want to, again, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you for coming on, sharing your stories, sharing your lessons. And as we do with all our guests, they get to go first. All their promotions, because we want to take time to give back, to serve them for coming on. So go follow Dan on X, the Dad of Leaders, all his social medias, his website, his coaching program, everything would be in the description below. It's going to go first. And then if you're a man out there, need a community and support group, we have the Men's Lifeline Academy Discord group. It's a paid subscription. Also be in the description with some of my socials. And so just go out, support both of us. But remember, go check out Dan first, because he's the man with the plan, and he's just an amazing guy. I've gotten to know a little bit better over the last couple of weeks. So, Dan, again, thank you for coming on the podcast.